We're in the midst of back to school. Some districts started on Monday, Tuesday. Today, we've got several districts going back, including Monroe. We've got Milford, Shelton, Oxford. I'm sure I'm missing some. More that are going back in the coming days and even early next week. And so we want to talk all about back to school safety. And who better to talk to than Teresa Parks? Sergeant Parks is the school resource sergeant in the city of Bridgeport. Sergeant Parks, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. I'm glad to have you here. First and foremost, what are some of the things that you and resource officers in general do to make sure they're prepped for an upcoming school year?
Well, you know what? The SROs, the school resource officers, they come into work early and they go out to the high schools and the elementaries. They're out there with their, you know, in their marked vehicles, their flashing lights, making sure that students are, you know, getting to school safe in safe corridors, that the drivers know school is back in session. We want everyone to, you know, drivers to obey the speed limits, slow down for our students and young people that are coming into school and, you know, making sure that they can get to school safely.
So let's start with before they actually get into the building. What are some of the biggest concerns that resource officers look at, you know, in the city of Bridgeport? What are you looking for to make sure that kids, families are safe, you know, making sure that they get from point A, their homes, to point B, the school, and back again safely?
Well, we're making sure that students are walking on sidewalks, and if there's not any sidewalks, you know, that they're walking in the direction of oncoming traffic so that the driver can see them and they can be seen. We want them on the sidewalks. We want them crossing at intersections, especially when there are crossing guards, so that the crossing guards can assist them getting from, you know, A to B and then get into school safely.
Now, with the school buses, so we understand walkers, obviously, and we understand with school buses the importance of sharing the road with the big yellow buses. We have had in recent years, though, and it's not particular to Bridgeport. In fact, I don't have a specific example with Bridgeport. Just in general, though, we've seen this across Connecticut and across the country. School buses that will drop children off, that is either the wrong bus stop or there's no parent there to pick them up and kids are found wandering the streets. What can you say about the importance of that in holding bus drivers accountable, but also families accountable to be there at those bus stops at the appropriate time to get the kids off the bus safely?
Oh, absolutely. So we haven't had that problem per se in Bridgeport. Our bus drivers do not let small children off at bus stops if there's no parent. I believe their rule is to bring the student back to the school so that they could be picked up from their parents or guardians. But yes, it is especially important that, you know, parents are on time to pick those students up. And if they're not, you know, they have to get a family friend or a family member to grab them. If not, they're going to be making a trip back to the school because we don't want any small children wandering, of course, being unsafe.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask. So that's the protocol. If there's nobody at the bus stop, the bus will bring the kids back.
That is correct. Yep.
Okay.
And and the schools will make those calls to the homes.
Okay. Understandable. And again, we have Sergeant Parks here, Sergeant Teresa Parks. She is the school resource sergeant in the city of Bridgeport. So for your role, Sergeant Parks, are you overseeing all public schools in Bridgeport? Or like how does that work? And how many resource officers are working right now for the city?
Right. So I am overseeing the school resource officers along with Captain Paul Gregg. And right now we have, a shortage, but we do have three SROs that are dedicated to making sure that our kids are safe.
I mean, I don't want to obviously get political at all. I am very much a huge proponent in having school resource officers. I think I know for myself, this is the first time sending my child into school as a kindergartner. And I The first thing I look for is, where's the resource officer? Where's the armed guard? Where is somebody? Because especially the times that we're living in right now. Talk about, if you don't mind, Sergeant Parks, the importance of having resource officers on campuses of school grounds. What success stories, if you don't mind, or just even an overview to bring peace of mind for families out there, the importance of having resource officers?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we have the three resource officers. They are absolutely great. Having resource officers on a campus, you know, you have that quick access for families and for the staff in the schools. The officers, they rotate and, you know, they go school to school. You know, we don't want the families to think that, you know, when they see a police officer, you know, that it's a bad thing or a negative. They can always talk to the officers, ask any questions, get advice if they're having any issues, whether it's in school or at home. They are on the school campuses. And, you know, we do have the regular police officers that patrol, but they also keep focus on the schools, you know, while they tour their sectors throughout the day.
I think I'm about to get into trouble. I might get written up for a school violation right now. Sergeant Parks, I thought you said Teresa Parks, and then I looked online and it says T-R-E-S-H-A, like Tresha. Is it Trisha or Tresha?
It's pronounced Tresha.
Tresha. So there was no way I was going to hit that at all. Okay, so Tresha. I am Tresha. So sorry. All right, how are you
That's
saying
okay.
it? So you're saying Tresha.
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 Yes.
Like climb a tree and then sha. Tresha.
Yes.
Love
yes.
that. What a beautiful name. Sorry to like digress completely from the conversation, but what a beautiful name. I've always called you Sergeant Parks. And then today I'm like,
no
wait a
problem.
Second. What's your first name? Okay. Tresha. What a gorgeous name. I love that.
Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
well,
you.
I'm so sorry about that, Sergeant Parks. Please don't write me up. I swear. Okay. I would love to do detention with you, but just I can't today. Maybe another day, though. So we have Sergeant Tresha Parks here, who is the School Resource Sergeant at the City of Bridgeport. And we're talking about, obviously, back to school safety. Let's talk about inside the school buildings in Bridgeport and what is done to make sure kids are protected. Like I said, we did orientation last week walking through my kid's new school and his district that he's in.
Yeah.
And some of the questions that I was asking kind of came from more of a reporter sense. I think I freaked out the teacher, but I just needed to know, like, what does that look like with preparing plans? Do you discuss things like, you know, escape plans or, you know, cameras or bulletproof windows? Like, what is sort of the plan look like from your perspective, keeping kids and faculty safe if there, God forbid, is a threat outside?
Right. So if there's a threat outside, we have school security officers, right? And we have our SROs that will respond to the schools. If there's a threat outside, we would notify the school that they need to do a lock-in, lock-out. And, you know, the school, the staff, and the children, they practice these procedures almost like, you know, back in the day when we did fire drills. You know, so the school will go into lock-in, lock-out. And what that means is if you're in the building, you will be locked in and instruction will continue. But if you are outside the building, you will be locked out. So if parents come to pick up kids or arrive late or anything like that, and there's something going on in the community, you will not be allowed in until the school is notified that it's safe in the area to release that lock-in and lock-out.
The other thing, too, that's a really interesting conversation, I was actually just having this with a teacher who now teaches up in the Monroe area but used to be a teacher in Fairfield. We were discussing, mm-hmm. you know, again, we both agree having resource officers because I know every district is different.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that I find is very helpful is when you have resource officers or police or retired police or whoever, but armed. Now, are you guys armed in Bridgeport?
So security officers are not armed guards, but obviously school resource officers are because they are certified police officers.
I feel like that's a no-brainer. I don't know how you could.
Yes.
I don't know why. I mean, I understand that there are districts that are like, we don't want guns in our schools. But kids associate the fact that police are going to keep them safe. So when kids see a
correct.
Police officer in their schools, I mean, effectively, how do you teach that? That the fact that I would feel safer knowing that if you're going to have a resource officer, that they have a gun on them, that they have a way of defending themselves or defending people in the school.
Correct. And, you know, we've been lucky in Bridgeport where we haven't had that issue. But, yes, the resource officers are armed, and the kids are safe. And, you know, we talk to students about, especially smaller children. You know, they like to give you hugs and come up close and touch things. And, you know, we let them know, this is real and it's not a toy, so we have to be safe. And we talk about, things like that. If they find firearms or anything, they would run and tell an adult, you know.
Yeah, I just think that sometimes we project our own fears onto our kids. Like, I think about the parents when I was growing up in the 90s who were like, I don't want our kids to do fire drills. I'm like, well, you got to do a fire drill. What if there's a fire?
You do.
Right? And but now we're living in a time where it's like kids have to do lockdown drills. What do those look like for people who may not be familiar? What do lockdown drills look like for you guys and for the city schools?
Well, we come in, the lockdown drills, we would come in. We do unannounced drills so that we can get a true reaction of how everyone would act and, give them some critique after on how long it took, what they did right, what they can improve on. So we would call a lockdown drill, and police and security would go through the building to make sure that the teachers and students are doing what was talked about. You know, their doors are locked. There's no one in the hallway. There's no movement. We used to cover, doors, windows of the doors and windows, but now that's no longer being done. So we want to see in the classroom and move through the building to make sure every classroom door is locked and there's no one in the hallway except for security and police officers.
How much of the communication gets back, do you know, or maybe that's more of like a superintendent question, but how much of the communication gets back to parents? So like if you want to do a drill, is there any communication that's like, hey, just a heads up, don't say anything to your kids, but we're doing this, or like, hey, we did this today, so that they also can be on board? Because I do think it's so effective that these kids feel as prepared as they possibly can. Again, hopefully for something that will never happen. But do the parents factor in at all with also making sure that they play a role in helping to secure what you guys are effectively doing, which is having plans in place and making sure that kids and faculty are on the same page in the event of an emergency?
Right. So I believe the parents are notified. I believe the Board of Ed sends them a phone blast or some kind of form of notification the same day stating that, hey, your child today in such and such school had a lockdown drill or a lock-in, lock-out, just so that they're not, worried that it was a real drill, that it was just a drill in mm-hmm. practice. They are not notified ahead of time. Obviously we want to, do it in true form and, see how everyone's reactions are and what they're doing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then one more thing, Sergeant Parks, I think you're so interesting. I want to have you back on the show. I'm curious, there are some districts that have very slowly started to bring detectors, metal detectors to the front doors of schools. What do you think about that? And again, doesn't have to be political. I'm just wondering from your professional standpoint, do you think that's effective? Do you think it's worth debating having that in Bridgeport schools? Or do you think that it's not really relevant? It's not really needed.
I think it is relevant. We want to keep our students safe. Right now in Bridgeport, we do have metal detectors in a high school, and I think it's a deterrent for students not to bring, things in the building that should not be and that could potentially harm someone. So we're all about safety. So the students know, I can't, if there was something, if they were thinking negative about something or did something over the weekend, had something in their book bag, may have forgotten, you know, this is not the place to bring any item that can potentially hurt someone.
So that's interesting.
If they do, there's going to be, you know, consequences.
Yeah. So you guys have the metal detectors at the high school level?
At the high school level, yes.
Wow. And you find that it's been effective?
It has been effective. Yes.
That's great. That's really great. Well, I want to just salute to you, Tricia Parks, Sergeant Parks, for all that you do and all the resource officers, not just in Bridgeport, but across the state of Connecticut. Seriously, you bring peace of mind to parents like myself. And so I want to thank you for being diligent with your plans, for caring about our kids, caring about our faculty and our schools. And thank you for taking the time to come on this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Again, Sergeant Parks, who is the resource sergeant, school resource sergeant for the city of Bridgeport here on WICC. There's really no such thing as tick season anymore, especially because we have mild winters here and ticks are really hard to kill off. So in Connecticut, for the last few years, we've really been experiencing ticks throughout the year. But certainly in these warmer months, they are out in full force. It has been a very active summer. And in recent news, we've even heard about Powassan virus that's been detected in ticks throughout Connecticut. So it seemed like a very good time to have our tick expert back on the show with us. Jessica Schneider is here, and she is the creator of Partner in Lyme, which is a 501c3 nonprofit charitable organization. It helps with the burdens of paying for Lyme and the treatment and the testing and everything that comes with it. This nonprofit provides $1,000 in financial assistance to residents in Connecticut dealing with Lyme diagnoses. And so we always welcome Jessica here. She is personally impacted by Lyme disease, and she is somebody who has become our tick and Lyme disease expert on the morning show. So Jessica, welcome back. Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good. I want to remind folks, though, that even though we kind of look at it as the summer's winding down, we're going back to school and things are getting back in session, the cooler months are on the way, that tick season, we are still expecting ticks to be around, and that the message still stands that there is no such thing as a tick season anymore in Connecticut, correct?
That is correct. Although there's ebbs and flows in how active they are, right now, they're very active. They will peak again in October and even into November before they kind of reduce their activity through their winter months. But we always have to be vigilant in Connecticut because, like you said, there is no tick season anymore. They're present year round, and we really need to protect ourselves.
And Jessica, let's talk about, obviously, prevention. That is one of the key topics that you and I discuss on this show constantly. What are some of the biggest things people need to be thinking about? You know, in the summertime, we focus on hiking. We focus on being outdoors. We focus even on being on the beach. What about kids at recess or kids who are now at school, maybe going on field trips? What do you suggest for parents when it comes to checking backpacks or what they should be, you know, doing before kids head off to the classroom?
You're absolutely correct in that. We tend to really focus on what we're doing when we're outside and active outside. And then when the summer ends and back to school starts, it kind of gets pushed to the side. But we really do need to think of it as a daily prevention method, just something that we incorporate into our morning routine with our children and our families. And with back to school, there's a few things that you can do, especially if kids go to school and they drop their backpacks on the playgrounds or after school when they drop their backpacks in a friend's yard before they come home. You can buy products like Sawyer's spray at any Walmart, Home Depot, Target, and you can treat fabric. So I would recommend treating backpacks, treating sneakers with a spray. Once it's dry, it's safe to wear. It lasts for several weeks. The backpack would probably last all fall because it's not being washed regularly.
Good point.
And that will kill ticks on contact. So the ticks, if they come into contact with it, don't get the opportunity to crawl up a leg and embed themselves somewhere. So I would highly recommend looking into a product like Sawyer's for treatment. You also need to know what works for you. In our family, we have several different repellents because we tend to use natural products for day-to-day use. And our bodies are also bio-unique, that the formulas that each product use may work better for you or it may work better for me. So it doesn't mean that the product is a bad product. It just isn't as effective for you as it is for me. So we have, you know, my daughter's product, my husband's product. So when we travel, we were just on vacation last week. We had three different products in our backpacks just for prevention, along with our tick kit that we travel with just in case we come into contact with one.
Mm.
So I would really, you know, test out different products, find what works for you and use it every day.
So again, we have Jessica here. She is our tick expert on the show. She also was the creator of Partner in Lyme, which is a nonprofit here in Connecticut that helps folks who are diagnosed with Lyme and helps with financial burdens that they face once they get that diagnosis. Jessica, sorry, I'm totally losing my voice. With spraying, just going back to that really quickly, I know obviously fabrics, you had mentioned the backpack, good idea. If you've got kiddos who have maybe the, you know, one or two hats that they go for, the same shoes that they wear, would you also recommend putting this on clothing or accessories?
I don't know. I would have to maybe call the company about spraying hats because it is so close, it's on your head.
Right.
I tend to veer towards more natural products,
okay,
but for things, you know, that are high exposure items that are not coming directly in contact with skin, like a backpack, I would be fine spraying that. Shoes, I'd be fine because you have your barrier of your socks. With a hat, though, I'm not so sure I personally, as a mom, would do that. But again, you can call the company and ask them that.
Okay. And do you recommend parents do tick checks when kids come home from school?
I do. I've heard too many stories of children contracting tick-borne disease on playgrounds. It's very common. So coming home, changing clothes, putting clothes directly in the dryer for at least 10 minutes on high will dehydrate a tick and kill it. So before you wash them, don't throw them in the washer first. Throw everything directly in the dryer.
Yes.
Have your child take a shower, you know, if
okay,
they can.
I was gonna have you reiterate actually some of those tips, because I know the last time you came on was in the middle of the summer. But when you return from the outdoors, whether it's kids coming home from school or maybe you were out for whatever the reason may be, you were out at a sporting event, you know, mm-hmm, whatever. What are the recommendations? What should people be doing, adults and children, as soon as they walk in the door?
It's the same thing. Just change, put those clothes directly in the dryer on high for at least 10 minutes. Shower so you can rinse off any tick that has not embedded, and do a thorough tick check looking for anything. They can be as small as a poppy seed. So people think, oh, I'll see it. But very often they get mistaken for a freckle, or they're literally just not seen. So showering is always a really good idea after school, after any sporting event. Especially in Connecticut, our fields are a really high-risk area, even if they're being groomed. Sometimes we think, oh, if it's recently mowed, it's not a risk. But remember, anything that travels on the ground, rabbits, squirrels, birds, are constantly dropping ticks. So we have to really think of every place as a possible exposure area, not to be paranoid, but just to be prepared. So it's a good thing to just incorporate routines into family life that are preventative.
And again, this isn't just for the humans. This also is for the pets, you know, to make sure you're still doing those tick checks on the dogs and cats, especially.
Definitely use some type of preventative measures for your pets. Very often our pets are in bed with us. That's a risk. I'm not going to tell anybody, don't let your dog or cat sleep in bed with you, but be aware that is a risk for the human as well, because that is how ticks do transmit. So mm-hmm, use some type of preventative measure. Talk to your vet, find what works best for your pet, and use it regularly. Do the tick checks on them, brush them out. Some people will use like duct tape because it's super sticky. If you just make a circle with it in your hand and pat down yourself or pat down your pet, sometimes you can pick things up off of their pads of their feet.
Oh.
But brushing is also, you know, if you can brush them outdoors, that's a good idea.
Mm.
Check them like you check yourselves, like you check your children.
Yeah. We have Jessica Schneider here, and she is our tick expert on the morning show. And she was the creator of Partner in Lyme, which is a nonprofit here in Connecticut. And we'll get you the resources that you need at the end of this interview. Jessica, we had questions, actually, which prompted me to reach out to you. And we also want to talk about Powassan, obviously, because we've seen more and more of those cases come up in Connecticut. This was a question in regards to sprays and repellents, just going back to that really quickly. This question had to do with what can be used for your hair and your face or even skin. I know know that we have insect repellents, we've got mosquito repellents, but as far as tick repellents, is there anything you recommend that you could get online or out in department stores or anything that can go directly on skin or into your hair? I know that's a big concern, especially for the ladies out there with long hair or men with long hair.
There are products that you can use. You have to make that personal decision whether you're going to use a product like Deep Woods Off that has DEET in it or something that has permethrin in it. Again, that's a personal decision. There's also a lot of natural products, some that are made in Connecticut, that combine oils and essential oils. Personally, those are the products that I use on my skin for day-to-day use. You just rub them in like a lotion and you can put them in your hair. You can put them directly on your skin. I would avoid the eye on the nose area in case it's irritating to your eyes or nose, but you can, you know, just kind of pat the perimeter of your face and your ears behind your hairline. Your neck is a really common area for ticks.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, ticks normally will crawl up your body. So while you can use, it's the best thing is just to keep your hair tied back if you have long hair, put it under a hat. But ticks generally are going to embed themselves in a warmer spot on your body as they travel upward. So finding a tick on your face is rare. It does happen, but it's rare. They like behind your ears. They like your neckline. They like your armpits, behind your knees, in between your toes, even under your toenails. They're looking for some place to really dig into. Your face is not the most common area that you would see a tick.
Okay, so only because, Jessica, I personally trust you. A lot of our listeners personally trust you because you come on the show so often as our tick expert. Do you mind sharing the name of the product that you use, and do you feel it's effective? Like, since you've been using these oil-based products, do you feel like it's been effective for you and your family?
There are two products that we use. I use them personally. Partner in Lime doesn't necessarily endorse them, although one does make donations to Partner in Lime, and
that's
they're
nice.
TikTok Naturals, and you can only purchase them online. They have a website. They're 100% natural. They're long-lasting. They even are water-resistant. I would definitely reapply after swimming, but if you go out in the rain, it's not just going to wash off. You wear it like a lotion. You put it in your hands, you rub it together, and then you rub it on your body. For me personally, it's very effective. I don't get, because you also want to protect against mosquito bites. We talk a lot about ticks.
Yeah.
So mosquitoes carry some of the same diseases that ticks carry. So you want to protect yourself against all biting insects. And for me, that product is very effective. There's also a product that my mom recommended because she was getting bit in Florida horribly. And there's a product that she recommended called Captain Stan's is our favorite restaurant. Captain Ron's.
Captain
and it, again,
Ron.
It's all natural. Yep. You get it online.
Okay. And TikTok Naturals.
Spray.
Okay.
It's essential oil with an oil carrier. That is more effective for my family members.
Okay. I mean, I'm looking these
really
up on my
alternate
okay.
between those two.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like you can either get them like in travel size, things like that. This is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that this is a no-brainer, and I appreciate you sharing the types. And again, this, you're saying you can spray into your hair. You could like spray it into your hand and kind of rub it around and then just sort of go through your hair. Okay.
Yep, exactly. It'll be fine putting it on your scalp, behind your ears. To me, it's a very fresh, refreshing scent. So it's not one of these really heavy, noxious essential oil smells. It's not like heavy in eucalyptus. It's a really well-balanced blend. The creator of that actually worked with Ali Hilfiger to create it. And she's, you know, huge in the tick-borne disease world. She's a huge advocate for this disease. So they created this together. And it's, you know, for me, it's like I said, it's really effective for me.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm adding it to my shopping list as soon as I get off the air. So again, TikTok Naturals. It is an organic insect repellent. And the other one that is recommended by Jessica, her mom has used it, especially down in Florida where, man, the bugs are cuckoo-ca-choo down there. Captain Ron. Is it Ron or Ron's with an S at the end?
I believe it's Ron's with an apostrophe.
Okay, let me just check that real fast here. Captain
I can send you the website for you to link it in
yes.
your show notes.
Yep, Captain Ron's with a capital, apostrophe S. So Captain Ron's insect repellent as well is another all-natural insect repellent.
We carry both of those. And I have them in our cars. We have one in each car, in our bags. We take them in our luggage when we travel. We have several bottles throughout our house. I've loaned them to neighbors. So
that's great.
We stockpile what works for us. So,
yeah.
Like I said, when we travel, we'll travel with three different types of repellents sometimes because we each have what works best for us.
That's great. Well, Jessica, I really appreciate this. And again, I want to let people know, if you want to support or learn more about Partner in Lyme and connect with Jessica, you can go to her website. That's partnerinlyme.org, PartnerInLyme, partnerinlyme.org. And Jessica, I thank you so much for the work that you do and for always being such a helpful guest on this show and for being our tick expert. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. And we'll check back in, I'm sure, since there's no such thing as tick season anymore. The ticks are bothering us all throughout the year. So Jessica will be back. If you ever have any questions, feel free to pass them along to WICC.
It's time to get out and explore.
Melissa in the Morning brings you science you may not know on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Tonight, get ready for an astronomical treat. The full moon will be a blue super moon. I want to understand this a little bit better, so who better to talk to about it than David Mestre of Science You May Not Know. Hey, David, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm getting excited for the blue super moon.
I'm super excited. First of all, what makes it a blue super moon? What is it, really blue?
Yeah, so it is not blue in color.
Oh,
but the term
blue
actually comes from, I know, boo-hoo.
Blue-hoo.
Yeah, but it actually comes from folklore. So
ooh,
there are a couple of things that we have to kind of unpack. You know, first, you know, the moon goes through its lunar cycles of phases. And, you know, we have just about every month or so, we've got a full moon. Now, it turns out that tonight's full moon is actually going to be the second full moon of August. So we actually had a full moon back on August 1st, and tonight will be the second full moon of this month, August 30th. And so what happens is that many times people kind of use that term, the second full moon of a month, they use the term blue moon to describe the second full moon of the month. But it turns out that that's not actually always the way it was described. Blue moons weren't actually the second full moon of the month. It actually goes back to a bit of folklore and Farmer's Almanac and those kinds of things. It was actually the extra full moon that occurred during an astronomical season. And so every season, you know, winter, spring, summer, fall, should have three full moons. And according to folklore, each of those full moons would be named the Sturgeon Moon, the Strawberry Moon, those kinds of things. But every once in a while, you would get an extra full moon sneaking into that season. And so the first full moon and the second full moon would be named, and the last full moon of the season would be named, and it was full moon number three of the season that was called a blue moon. So that's not what's happening tonight. So that's actually, we're actually using what's called the calendaric definition of a blue moon, and that actually originates back in 1946 because a gentleman by the name of James Pruitt, who was he was writing an article for a magazine called Sky and Telescope, he actually misinterpreted what the blue moon was supposed to be and actually wrote down in his article that, oh, a blue moon is actually the second full moon of the month. And that definition went viral. It stuck. And even today, NASA accepts that that's another definition for a blue moon.
Oh, see, I was sure that the reason it was called the Blue Moon was because this song is amazing.
Blue Moon, you saw me standing alone.
So it has nothing to do with the song. It's not the Blue
Moon
song.
I was waiting for you to cue that.
I was waiting for you to start singing, and I'm like, all right, fine. I'll take this one for him. I'll start playing it.
So, but it's also a super moon. Now, that's actually a more recent kind of a definition. And basically what it is that the moon's orbit around the Earth isn't a perfect circle. So sometimes it's closer to the Earth and sometimes further away. That's the nature of the elliptical shape of the moon's orbit. Well, if the full moon occurs within 90% of the distance that brings it closest to the Earth, we call that point the perigee of the moon's orbit, then we call that a supermoon. Now it's really hard to tell, but the moon actually being closer is actually bigger and brighter during that full moon.
Wow.
And so tonight's full moon is actually going to be a supermoon. And this is actually the second supermoon of August. So we actually had two supermoons this month, and this full moon is going to be the full blue supermoon. And our moon is actually going to be tonight probably about 8% larger and about 15% brighter than an average full moon.
Oh, wow. So definitely get the eye masks ready if you have to go to
sleep. You probably will. You probably will. But now it turns out that if you really want to wait a while for the absolute closest full supermoon of the 21st century,
mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to have to wait until December 6th of 2052.
Why? That's the
closest? The full moon is going to be a whopping 221,472 miles from Earth. That's super close.
Oh, my God. I'll be 62 years old. I don't know. I don't know if I can. Does my calendar go out that far?
Hang in there.
Good grief.
Do it. Put it on your calendar right now.
Let me just go forward 20 some odd years. Okay, fine. I'm scrolling.
Yep. And if you want to wait for the next blue supermoon, you won't see another blue supermoon again until January of 2037.
That's kind of crazy. Although, when was the last time we saw a blue supermoon?
Yeah, so the last blue supermoon was actually in December of 2009. So blue supermoons are actually kind of rare. A blue moon isn't really all that rare. We actually get blue moons just about every 2.5 to 3 years. So blue moons are rare, but they're not like super rare. But if you have a super blue moon, well, no, that can be pretty rare.
It sounds like it's about a 14-year span. That because from 2009 to 2023,
yeah.
14 years. Now the next one's coming in 14 years.
You've got a cycle going, exactly. Yeah. So it's and that may be enough of a predictor to be able to kind of calculate. And we can do this also with a lot of gravitational mathematics and stuff like that to be able to figure that out. But I think you've got a pretty good pattern there. So
thank you so much. Now I'm curious, David. Can you see this anywhere? Because sometimes you'll see these astronomical phenomenons and you have to be like on a high hill, or you've got to be in certain places. You've got to be in very dark places like an Easton or a Monroe or even, like Milford Orange, where they don't have as many streetlights. Is that the case with tonight or no?
Yeah, no, you won't have to worry about that tonight, because some events, you're right, do have to be seen on the western horizon during a certain time, those kinds of things. You won't have to worry about this one because the moon's going to be visible pretty much all night. And the nature of a full moon is that when the sun sets, the moon actually rises, and then we'll have that full moon pretty much, or most of that full moon, but the full moon will be with us for practically all night until sunrise.
Wow. Well, I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, so it'll be really kind of cool. So just kind of find a spot. Hopefully the weather will cooperate. Maybe there'll be a little bit of a break in the weather. But it'll be really hard to tell that it's bigger and brighter because it's not something that we really notice all the time. But it'll be just slightly bigger, a little slightly brighter, and it'll be a blue supermoon. According to folklore and a little bit of mistaken misinterpretation in the Sky and Telescope. But it's actually kind of interesting because, and I'll leave you with this kind of thought. There actually have been times when the moon actually turned the color blue.
Blue before.
It has turned blue, yes. And so there are special events that have to make it blue, and it's nothing to do with the moon, but it has everything to do with the atmosphere.
So, I was going to say, is it reflecting the atmosphere?
It actually has to do with volcanoes. And so there was actually a giant volcanic eruption, Krakatoa, I think it was back in the 1880s. It sent so much microscopic particulate ash into the atmosphere that it actually robbed the moonlight of its reddish colors because, you got this white moonlight that's coming towards you. It actually was robbing it so much of its red color that all that was left was blue light coming from the moon.
Wow.
And so for a while, the moon actually looked blue.
That's so cool.
Yeah, Yeah.
Wow. Well, that is, I mean, Krakatoa is crack-a-blowing my mind right now. That's incredible.
Yeah, I know. Imagine that, like a giant volcano that people could hear 300 kilometers away, the bang of it. It caused a global distribution of microscopic ash throughout the entire atmosphere, and it actually caused the moon to turn blue.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
But tonight's is not going to be blue.
No, thankfully not. That,
yeah, we don't have any volcanoes kind of showing around here
we're in good shape.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That would be pretty wild if it were a blue super moon.
Yeah, but this is definitely shaping up to be a very super duper August, you know, because we've got the second super moon happening this month, and tonight is the blue super moon, and you don't want to miss it because the next one won't be back until January of 2037. So definitely just keep your eyes to the sky. Could be a little bit brighter, a little bit larger than what you typically see, and certainly an astronomical treat for us. Thank you so much for the heads up there, David. Appreciate it.
All right, just keep looking up.
I will. I plan to do so. I'm going to start now, although that doesn't really make any sense because it's not here yet, but that's okay. It'll be here. I know it. David Mestre of Science You May Not Know, thank you so much. Always appreciate your fun facts, and certainly ahead of a very exciting evening here in Connecticut on WICC.